Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Ballabha Girivara Dhari. Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Ballabha Girivara Dhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanashadhi. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabihari. Madhava Kunjabihari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Gopi Jana Ballabha Girivara Dhari. Gopi Jana Ballabha Girivara Dhari. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yasoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Yamuna Tira Vanachari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Jai Om Vishnu Pad Paramahamsa Parivijagacharya Asta Tarasata Sisi Maharaj Divine Grace Sisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Kid Ananta Koti Vaishnavarinda Kid Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Kid Samveda Bhakta Vrinda Kid Nitai Gorpimanandi. All glories to the assembled devotees, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. You have a powerful voice. Okay. Text 55, Canto 4, Chapter 29. Satvam chachiksham riga cheshtitam atmanos tas. Chittam neyacha hridikarna dunim chachitte. Jayanganashrayanashramam asattamayuttakatam. Prinihi hamsa sharanam virama kramena. Satvam chachiksha mriga cheshtitam atmanontash. Chittam niyacha hridikarna dunim chachitche. Jayanganashramam asattamayuttagatam. Prinihi hamsa sharanam virama kramena. Satvam jichaksha mriga cheshtitam atmanontash. Chittam niyacha hridikarna dunim chachitte. Jayanganashramam asattamayuta gatam. Prinihi hamsa sharanam virama kramena. Satvam jichiksha mriga cheshtitam atmanontash. Chittim niyacha hridikarna dunim chachitte. Jayanganashramam asattamayutagatam. Priniti hamsa sharanam virama kramena. Satvam vichaksha riga cheshtitam atmanontash. Chittam niyacha hridikarna dunim chachitte. Jayanganashramam asattamayuttagatam. Prinihi hamsa sharanam virama kramena. Ladies. Satvam chichiksha. Satvam vichaksha mriga cheshtitam atmanontash. Chittam niyacha hridikarna dunim chachitte. Jayanganashramam asattamayat yutam. Priniti hangsa sharanam viramakramena. Satvam vichaksha mriga cheshtitam atmanontash. Chittam niyacha hidikarna dunim cha chitte. Saha, that very person. Tvam, you. Vichaksha, considering. Mriga cheshtitam, the activities of the deer. Atmanah, of the self. Antaha, within. Chittam, consciousness. Niyacha, fixed. Hridi, in the heart. Karna dunim, oral reception. Cha, and. Chite, unto the consciousness. Jahi, give up. Angana ashramam, household life. Asat tama, most abominable. Yuta gatam, full of stories of man and woman. Priniti, just accept. Hangsa sharanam, the shelter of the liberated souls. Virama, become detached. Kramena, gradually. Translation, my dear king, just try to understand the allegorical position of the deer. Be fully conscious of yourself. And give up the pleasure of hearing about promotion to heavenly planets by fruitive activity. Give up household life, which is full of sex, as well as stories about such things, and take shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through the mercy of the liberated souls. In this way, please give up your attraction for material existence. Any questions? Three-page purport by Srila Prabhupada. In one of his songs, Srila Narottama Das Thakur writes, Karmakanda, Gyanakanda, Kevala, Vishera, Bandha, Amrita, Balya, Yeba, Kai. Nana yoni sada pire, kadarya bhakshana kare, tara janma ata pate yai. Translation. Fruitive activities and mental speculation are simply cups of poison. Whoever drinks of them, thinking them to be nectar, must struggle very hard, life after life, in different types of bodies. Such a person eats all kinds of nonsense and becomes condemned by his activities of so-called sense enjoyment. Unquote. People are generally enamored of the fruitive results of worldly activity and mental speculation. They generally desire to be promoted to heavenly planets, or merge into the existence of Brahman, or keep themselves in the midst of family life, enchanted by the pleasures of the tongue and genitals. The great sage Narada clearly instructs King Barhishman not to remain his entire life in the grihastha ashram. Being in the grihastha ashrama means being under the control of one's wife. One has to... That's what it says. Don't blame me. One has to give up all this and put himself into the ashrama of the Paramahansa, that is, put himself under the control of the spiritual master. The Paramahansa ashrama is the ashrama of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, under whom the spiritual master has taken shelter. The symptoms of the bona fide spiritual master are stated in Srimad Bhagavatam 11.3.21. Tasmad guru prapadyeta jigyasu shreya uttamam shabde parecha nishnatam brahmani upashamashrayam. Expanded translation. Any person who is seriously desirous of achieving real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments, and thus be able to convince others of these conclusions. Such great personalities who have taken complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, are to be understood as bona fide spiritual masters. Unquote. So that's a nice quote. There's a initiation exam. The first question is, one of the questions is, what's the qualifications? So here's a nice verse. There's another nice one, a nectar of instruction. Okay, new paragraph. A Paramahansa is one who has taken shelter of the Parabrahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If one takes shelter of the Paramahansa spiritual master gradually through training and instruction, he or she will become detached from worldly life and ultimately return back home, back to Godhead. The particular mention of the third line down, Anganashramam Asat Tama Yuta Gatam, is very interesting. The whole world is in the clutches of Maya, being controlled by woman. Not only is one controlled by the woman who is one's wife, but one is also controlled by so many sex literatures. That is the cause of one's being entangled in the material world. One cannot give up this abominable association through one's own effort. But if one takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master who is a Paramahansa, he or she will gradually be elevated to the platform of spiritual life. Two pages, one more to go. Prabhupada has a lot to say about this topic. The pleasing words of the Vedas that inspire one to elevate oneself to the heavenly planets, or merge into the existence of the Supreme, are for the less intelligent, who are described in Bhagavad Gita as mayaya paritta jnana, or those whose knowledge is taken away by the illusory energy. Real knowledge means understanding the miserable condition of material life. One should take shelter of a bona fide liberated soul, the spiritual master, and gradually elevate himself to the spiritual platform and thus become detached from the material world. Then he's going to describe in the fourth line, hansa, Sharanam. According to Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Hamsa Sharanam refers to the cottage in which saintly persons live. Generally, a saintly person lives in a remote place, in the forest, or in a humble cottage. However, we should note that the times have changed. It may be beneficial for a saintly person's own interest to go to the forest and live in a cottage, but if one becomes a preacher, especially in Western countries, he has to invite many classes of people who are accustomed to living in comfortable apartments. Therefore, in this age, a saintly person has to make proper arrangements to receive people and attract them to the message of Krishna consciousness. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, perhaps for the first time, introduced motor cars and palatial buildings for the residents of saintly persons just to attract the general public in big cities. The main fact is that one has to associate with a saintly person. In this age, people are not going to search out a saint in the forest, so the saints and sages have come to the big cities and make arrangements to receive the people in general who are accustomed to the modern amenities of material life. Gradually, such persons will learn that palatial buildings or comfortable apartments are not at all necessary. The real necessity is to become free from material bondage in whatever way possible, according to the orders of Srila Rupa Goswami. Anasaktasya vishayan yatarham upayunjataha nirbanda krishna sambande yuktam vairagyam uchate. Translation. When one is not attached to anything, but at the same time accepts everything in relation to Krishna, one is rightly situated above possessiveness. Unquote. Last paragraph. One sentence long, two sentences. One should not be attached to material opulence, but material opulence may be accepted in the Krishna consciousness movement to facilitate the propagation of the movement. In other words, material opulence may be accepted as yukta vairagya, that is, for renunciation. So this is the last verse of the three, four verses of Narada giving this allegory. Next, the light goes on with the king. I got it. Let's see if he gets it. But here, in an appropriate manner, Narada is both summarizing what the allegory is and summarizing the whole message of both allegories. He's appealing to the king, which means he's also appealing to us. The Bhagavatam is appealing to us. Please, my dear king and my dear devotees, please understand your position, or the allegorical position of the deer, which is your position, our position. Be fully conscious of yourself, meaning the spirit soul. And the spirit soul is in a perilous situation, a foreign situation, a toxic, unhealthy situation. And within the purport, embellishing what's in the verse, there are three common intoxicants. Stay and try to make the toxic situation enjoyable. Second option, elevate to the heavenly realm and enjoy heavenly pleasures in the heavenly realm, or out of frustration try to enter into the Brahmajyoti, just shut down individuality because it's too problematic. So this age, there's some that sincerely want to attain the heavenly realm, but most part, it's like a pyramid. Most part, it's people just want to enjoy. And if part of enjoying is enjoy piously, that's okay, but it's enjoy. Unregulated, regulated, however. Then there are those that see the next life, and they're making preparations in this life for the next life, and that's their aspiration. Largely, enjoy modestly and enjoy like anything in the next position. It's something like people that work very hard in their fruitive endeavors to save up some money so they can have a nice vacation. It's not the same, but it's quite similar. Work hard, save money, have a vacation, spend all the money, go back to work and work hard and save money and go on a vacation. It's described in Prabhupada's writings, that sankalpa vikalpa, accepting, it's the platform of the mind. That's what the mind does, sankalpa vikalpa, accepting, rejecting, make a plan for enjoyment, or as he describes, work on the weekdays, take a vacation on the weekend, work, and then it's like children during the summertime. They can't wait till the last day of school, and when the summer is over, they can't wait to get back to school because they're bored. Sankalpa, vikalpa. At least it's, you know, some children are different, but that's common. Because there is no enjoyment in the real sense of the term. So, therefore, the appeal, try to understand yourself. And the position of contemplating heavenly pleasure and hearing the descriptions of heavenly pleasure, and both of those inspiring one to do karmakanda activities to achieve heavenly pleasure. My dear king, please give that up. And then there's the worldly one. There's the attraction for male-female interaction. Or hearing descriptions of such things. It's undeniable. The advertisements, the movies. It's just making such an appeal for varieties of unwholesome male-female interaction. It's one of the things I dislike the most about long international flights coming back from India or going to India is, you know, all the, now they have the movie thing where they can just take their, all their variety of movie things, and especially it's predictable. They're going to watch all the, whatever the Bollywood movies are on that little screen. And it's all about the same stuff. But, you know, there's a taste for it. That's why they have it. Because there's a market. People want to, you know, young, old, in between. It's I'll just, when I was very new in Krishna consciousness, there was some service that I had to do in South India, so I took the opportunity to go to Tirupati. So I went to Chennai, and some devotees took me on an early morning trip to Chennai, to Tirupati. We got special darshan. It didn't take, you know, we got back the same day. So I was really impressed with how religious people were in South India. Very, you know, their dress, their mannerisms, the way, you know, the way that they conducted themselves. And then some time passed and some occasion for visiting Tirupati came again. An invitation from Revati Raman, come see our guest house and our new temple and, you know, a special. So I flew to Chennai, and then you go from the airport to the train station, you have to go through downtown. I was shocked. I'm still, like, shocked. There, the culture is gone. I mean, there are still some people, older people, that maintain that culture. But going through the city, billboards is just completely covering buildings. You know, at eye level, huge billboards, not just the ones up in the air, but, you know, street level, huge billboards of, guess what, half-clothed women advertising toothpaste and, you know, anything under the sun, just, you know, half-exposed bodies. And although, you know, it's not one or two, like, that's the culture now. I was shocked. And then I got on the train, you know, going to the Holy Dham, Tirupati. So I was in one of those chair cars. And there was some old people and their little kids, their grandchildren or whatever. And then there was some young people. And the way that they were conducting themselves, the young people, I don't even see that in public in America. Well, you know, maybe I'm out of it. But the way that they were carrying on the way to Tirupati, I just wanted to, like, hide under the seat and cry. It was so shocking and, you know, shameless. Going to the Holy Dham. Who knows what they did in the Holy Dham? Kali Yuga is out of control. Out of control. And that's, you know, the top of the mountain. You just go down the mountain and it gets darker and more tamasic. So it's not slowing down. It's moving faster and faster. It's not like alarmist. It's just that's what's going on. And the Bhagavatam is advising the reader. Narada is advising Barhishman, Barhishat, King Prajini Bari, has all these three names to the same person, to let go of that. Let go of the expectation of happiness through that. This sex songs and sex literature and sex advertisements, and just spin out on disturbed state of mind. So it doesn't lead to the kind of happiness that it promises. That's certainly the message of Bhagavad Gita. Yehi sparsha ja bhoga dukha yonaya evate. I mean, I quote that verse often, but it's because it's so true. The expectation, putting it in Vedic language, real simple languages, bring the senses to sense objects, and you're going to get happiness. That's the expectation. But in something else happens. Dukkha happens. Dukkha yonaya evate. One gets distress. And it happens again and again and again and again, and people still do the same thing again and again. It's really dumb. It's inspired by the mode of ignorance. But passion keeps impelling one. It says, you know, just do it differently. Little adjustments. Keep trying.
And the whole world is driven by that. And to get the object that the senses want to contact, then there's fruitive activity to have the asset to get the object, to get the happiness. It's the mode of passion. And dukkha yonaya evate. Punch you in the nose. I mean, remember a lecture Prabhupada gave in Henry Street, Brooklyn Temple. He motioned like this. He said, Maya's call is, come on and enjoy me. Come on and enjoy me so I can kick you in the face. When I heard him say that, I thought of the Iliad and the Odyssey and that character and the siren, whatever how you pronounce, and she's beckoning. That's Maya. Come on and enjoy me. Come on and enjoy me. Like a prostitute. So I can kick you in the face. And the materialistic persons who have the expectation that, you know, living with a woman, you know, religiously or irreligiously, that's the appeal. Let me enjoy. Or the other way around, woman and man, let me enjoy. And that's not what happens. But the appeal is there. So the advice is, don't go there. Don't let your consciousness go there. What do you do if you don't do that? Take shelter of a Paramahansa Vaishnav. That's the advocate. The two-thirds of the three-page purport is on that point. Take shelter of one who is situated beyond that attraction. And then it gives the description. Well, how do you tell? I'll read the translation again. Any person who is seriously desirous of achieving real happiness must seek out a bona fide spiritual master and take shelter of him by initiation. The qualification of a spiritual master is that he must have realized the conclusion of the scriptures by deliberation and arguments. Shabde pare. And thus be able to convince others of these conclusions. Nishnatam. Shabde parecha nishnatam. Such great personalities who have taken complete shelter of the Supreme Godhead, Brahmani, those who have taken complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, leaving aside all material considerations, upasamashrayam, leaving aside all material considerations. Those are the characteristics of a bona fide spiritual master. Fixed. Take shelter of such a person. Find such a person. Take shelter of such a person. And Prabhupada explained, such a person trains one. And this is part of the training. Narada's training the king. We're being trained by our founder Acharya and his translations of and commentary on the Bhagavatam. Then he goes to this phrase. It's not just the particular woman, the woman with whom I associate my wife, but it's all the rest. It's the literature and the advertising and the garbage that tries to allure one to that position of being the false enjoyer. What is it about a half-naked woman that has an appeal for toothpaste? Nothing to do with the toothpaste. It's just advertising. It's disgusting. But it works. People buy the toothpaste. That's why they keep doing it, because it works. Promote their sales. And this society becomes further degraded and further degraded and further degraded. Just like Gauramani was sharing with me last night, from the Bud Billiken parade, the public exposure that has taken place over the past number of years, he described that initially there was some resistance, like, what are you people doing here? And gradually that's changed to, you know, it was, the reception was very nice. People were, I was impressed. Simple, happy, waving, you know, very happy to see us. I was surprised to hear his report that previously it was cold shoulder, and now it's warmth. So because of the message that they stand for and the way that Gauramani presents it, he said he was invited some time ago to a function that was attempting to stop crime. South Chicago is famous for crime. I mean, Chicago is famous for crime. Al Capone and, you know, but this is just a little story. The first time I visited Chicago when Pietrushava was the president, the person that picked me up was a police officer. And, you know, he was a congregation member. And I was, you know, because I had some awareness of the reputation of Chicago and violence, and I asked him on the car ride from the airport, do you know, remember who that person is, a black fellow?
Yeah.
I'm sure you know.
Yeah,
I know. But so I asked him, what's it like being a police officer in Chicago? You know, innocent question. He said, just recently, I was sitting in a parking lot in my police car with my head just so my eyes could see up above the windscreen, you know, the hood of the car, and there was a shootout in the parking lot between one gang and another gang. And I said, what'd you do? I said, just watched it. Peanut gallery, you know, because what do you do? It's out of control. It's out of control. And, you know, it's not new. It's out of control, still out of control. So he was invited to go to some function where they, you know, they wanted, you know, a peaceful vibration, so they had him chant. So they were on stage chanting, and he looked out into the audience, like in a maybe the same park where we were, and there were barbecue pits all over the place. And Gauramani said, my realization while we were chanting is, it's not going to work. These people, you know, they're too much attached to acts of violence, and they don't like the byproduct of human violence, but it's they're perpetrating violence. So they're going to get violence. And how to get that message through to these people. So he said, the only way at this stage is just chanting, because they're not going to hear any message. You know, cut out the barbecue. They're not going to hear it. Too much attached to the tongue. And guess what else? As it's being repeated here, tongue and genital. Most unfortunate circumstance. So there are gradations of darkness, but it's darkness. And the Bhagavatam is meant to bring light into that place of darkness. That's the statement of, in the first canto, chapter 3, that the Bhagavatam is bringing light into this dark age of Kali. It's the place of shelter. If somehow, through prasadam distribution and the chanting of the holy name, people can be brought to the position of hearing this message carefully and continue taking prasadam and continue chanting and hearing this message carefully, just as Narada is appealing to the king, please hear this carefully. Please contemplate carefully. Please try to understand your position. Please try to understand our position. It's perilous. And the other options are dead ends. Continue to be an enjoyer. Seek heavenly elevation. Seek liberation. Like, you know, that person that we met on the street and gave us the card, and, you know, because I didn't look at the card, just put it in my pocket, but later it's seeking knowledge, seeking real truth, something like that. But his program was he just wanted to sell us his T-shirt. You know, business. You know, a nice shirt with a heart, and, you know, heart, buy my T-shirt. Searching for truth. Searching for money. It's just, you know, it's unfortunate. Even something good becomes contaminated. It's unfortunate. What to do? Go on chanting and hearing Srimad Bhagavatam and giving opportunities to others as much as we can. So, then the last page, Prabhupada, again, it's like four or five times, he says in different language, seek shelter of a Paramahansa Vaishnava. Take shelter of a qualified person. This is Canto 4, Chapter 29. It's nice. The message of the Bhagavatam is symmetrical. It's harmonious. In the third canto, Kapila Dev says the same thing to Devahuti. She's not entangled in fruitive expectations like the king, but she's appealing to her son. Chapter 24 of Canto 3, please, it's your energy, it's your maya that has me captured. Please give me release from your maya so I can be situated in freedom. And he gives her the same message. Sadhu Sangha, take association of saintly persons. And then he describes the saintly persons. He describes how to associate with the saintly persons. He describes the outcome of associating with the saintly persons. But it's the same theme. No surprise. Narada is, in fact, that saintly person. And others who Narada has duly elevated. So that's how a Paramahansa spreads the message of pure devotion by multi-level marketing, by making some persons pure and then engaging them in making other persons pure, the disciplic succession method. And exactly as what Srila Prabhupada did. He expected his followers to be such representatives, to become, through his association and instructions and faithful following, for us to become such representatives. And we look at ourselves and go, yikes. How and when is that going to happen? But by mercy and by faithful following. Exactly. I'll just read it. And end. One cannot give up this abominable association through one's own effort, but if one takes shelter of a bona fide spiritual master, who is a Paramahansa, he will gradually be elevated to the platform of spiritual life. Gradually, through training and instruction, he will become detached from worldly life and ultimately return back home, back to Godhead. That's our hope. And it's not a false hope. It's substantial. It's real. Follow the instruction step by step. And the kramena, the last line, the last word of the last line is gradually. Like, it sounds like he's saying, there's the door, king, hit the road. get out of the palace and go to the forest. But it's gradually. In this way, please give up your attraction for material existence through association. Hamsa sharanam virama kramena. By the association of saintly persons, one will become detached gradually. Not too gradually. Not so slow that you can't even see it happening, but gradually.
And that's our method.
Hare Krishna. Any discussion? Yes.
Explain how hearing and chanting in the association of devotees is very purifying, brings one closer to the lotus feet of Krishna, and so on and so forth. And Prabhupada here has explained that one must take shelter of a Paramhamsa Vaishnav.
I'm waiting for the but.
Well, I was wondering, could you explain a little bit about what is the purification that happens when one gets initiated? Because one is getting purified through hearing and chanting in the association of devotees. However, this point of taking shelter of a Paramhamsa Vaishnav is very much stressed in our literatures, and I was wondering if you could explain the purification that happens when one does like that.
There's a very nice verse. There's many very nice verses. There's one of those very nice verses is a definition given in Rupa Goswami's Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, where he states what the definition of diksha is, or what happens, what's the difference between before and after. Because that seems to be your question, yeah? I'll give a simple paraphrase of the verse. He says, two things happen. Sins are eradicated and knowledge, divyam jnanam, transcendental knowledge, tato dadyat, is imparted. Tata diksha vidhanena, dvijatam jayate nirnam. The learned persons speak this way, that this is the two things that happen at the time of initiation. So it's what happens before initiation is those things are also happening. And after initiation, those things continue to happen. So what's the unique thing about initiation? It's the formal connection. Everything else is preliminary or preparatory. It's getting ready. And then the formal connection. So the full potential is accessible by that formal acceptance, the formal submission. Like, you know, bring the electric cord together with the socket and all the other things that you do before then. It's preparatory. It's not child's play or imitation or illusion. It's also purifying. But the essence of the process or the event of initiation is submission and acceptance. And then the ongoing purification. So the potential is there just from the event. Because we're strongly conditioned, it's an ongoing process. But so that we can receive that which is available to us through that now being connected to disciplic succession, further and further and further and further. Divyam jnanam tato dadyat kuryat papasya sangshaya. Papa means sin. Sangshaya, without a doubt. The potency is there in that. Just like to so many things that are described in Nectar Devotion, about, you know, the process of devotional service, and there's different glorifications. And if one has a little bit of a speculative tendency or doubting tendency or mental tendency, they look at it and say, well, wait a minute. Like, for example, one who sees the form of Lord Jagannath coming along the Ratha Yatra and he stands in appreciation. He's as good as a four-armed resident of Vaikuntha. We don't see people at Rath Yatras with sprouting four arms. We don't see it. But the potency is there. So these are not hyperbole or exaggeration. The potency is there. It's so potent. It reminds me of the Kaliya Leela, where in many cases Krishna just touches his foot, like to the serpent that was swallowing Nanda Maharaj. He just touched his foot to the head of the serpent, and immediately the serpent was transformed and the Gandharva was released from the curse that he had. Just touched his foot. But Kaliya was so envious. Krishna was smashing him and smashing him and smashing him and smashing him and smashing him. And he was still trying to bite him. So we're not like the Gandharva that was cursed to become a snake. We're more like Kaliya. We need, get lots of mercy. Strongly delivered. Right upon the head. But the potential is there just by one touch. Not an exaggeration. The potency is there. Okay? Right here. You had your hand up?
Yes.
Please.
Thank you, Maharaj. The verse was describing Yukta Vairagya and how we can use palatial buildings to attract people. Prabhupada was explaining, and we know Bhakti Siddhanta, Prabhupada Bhakti, they had extraordinary cases of Yukta Vairagya, very unconventional uses. Jitendra Prabhu recently loaned me the Radha Damodar Vilas, part 2, and in it they have the traveling rock opera, and they're using that... The traveling rock opera to attract...
Opera.
Yeah.
Yeah,
the
I remember
devotees.
That one.
Yeah. And so Prabhupada went to go see this in Pittsburgh, and he liked it. He said it was good. They had deity worship, and there was a lot of preaching in it.
Yeah.
And then they took it to Boston, and then a Broadway producer saw it, and he thought it would be the next Jesus Christ Superstar, the next big hit on Broadway. He said, this show is very good. There's a lot of potential for this, to make a lot of money. And the devotees thought, this is a good way to preach also. And he said, there's just a couple of things that we just have to tweak a little for a Broadway audience. For instance, the deity worship. They said they might not be receptive to that, so they removed that part of it, Radha Damodar. And so more like this, they changed some things, and then it was mentioned in the book, it became very much like a cabaret, a lot of dancing. And so Prabhupada got wind of it. They sent the letter to Prabhupada, this is what's going on. Some devotees left the party. They think it's a little different. The backstage, brahmacharis, they're mixing innocently, but still.
Not so innocently, but go ahead.
Yeah, so they, as they say, better.
I was around when that was going on. Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
So Prabhupada mentioned that, he said, this actually people will be, he said, you should actually disengage from this because people will be engaged more to the form rather than the essence. And some may come, some may even become devotees, but they may not have the essence, it may not last. And Vishnu Jan Swami, he also wanted to do Yoga Village. He said, we'll only do Indian instruments then, and we'll do something separate respectfully. And he said, just do kirtan and kartals, because after all, Lord Chaitanya is God, and if that's his plan, how can it fail? And he said, we should just be simple like that, and not have people attracted to the form. They should be attracted to the essence. So my question is, it seems like for a great idea, many of us may never have picked that up. We might have just rolled with it if Prabhupada wasn't there, if there wasn't a higher authority there to let us know that it seems like a good Yukta Vairagya type situation, but actually it is not such a good idea in the long run. So my question is, how can we always know? What is your advice for those who want to engage something in Yukta Vairagya? And they may not be sure if it's appropriate, or they may be positive.
If you're not sure, then don't. That's my advice. And even if you're sure, like it started something that was one thing, and then over time it started, if you see that it becomes core elements start to disappear, even in the Yukta Vairagya stage, put on the brakes fast. because it's about to crash, and or you know, just at least you know, pull the reins in tightly. When one is just like what you're doing, the book distribution, the activity itself is fine, but by going out and mixing, there's risk. I mean, there's risk doing anything. Don't go out. Just stay in the temple room and you know, chant japa. There's risk. Stay in your room, or you go into a cave. You know, whatever you do, there's risk. But when you're preaching, there's risk. So if you see that standards are dropping, the senses are going here, the mind is going there, pulling the reins, and you know, because there's the danger. It's something like, you know, the green light, red light, and now it's kind of gone, but the flashing yellow light, you're passing through a dangerous intersection, slow down. They used to have one of those near Gita Nagari. Now it's like, it's a red light. Because there are too many crashes. Flashing yellow light didn't work. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, the barometer is attraction for sense gratification diminishing? Or the converse is attraction for Krishna bhakti increasing? Anyway, put yourself under the guidance of a qualified person who's detached and will tap you on the shoulder or bang you on the head if you start going off the middle of the road and heading for the ditch. You know, then as what happened, Prabhupada stopped it abruptly. And, you know, I didn't read Damodar Vilas part 2, but it's maybe sanitized a little bit. You know, it wasn't so pristine as you just described. It was his heading for the ditch. And it wasn't just Prabhupada saw it heading for the ditch. There are many persons who saw it heading for the ditch. But, you know, they weren't responding to their God brothers. And God sisters that were saying, you know, you're heading for the ditch. And it wasn't just what the Broadway entrepreneur was doing. It was the other signs. And I was thinking about Jai Jagannath's question yesterday, you know, the whiplash question. There, someone that heads into that region, this is now answering your question, it's the thought on yesterday's question. Can you just like lean that way so I can... Okay, thanks. There are signs before the whiplash. It's not all of a sudden. There are signs. Without going into details. There are signs. And one of those signs, this is now yesterday's question, is harshness. And extremes, you know, and unreasonable standards, you know, the lack of empathy. That, you know, someone is inside is coming on, you know, unwound. And though, so to counteract that, it's extreme, control, harsh, you know. And I can think of a number of examples like that, where that was a symptom. So I had a discussion with one godbrother on this point specifically, and that was this godbrother's analysis. And thinking about it, it's true. So it's not that some decision some long ago, you know, somebody that's considering what ashram should I be in, that I made the wrong decision, so I have to like jump into the wrong decision, another wrong decision. It's, you know, be vigilant. supposing, so at my present status, this is the right, it's wholesome, and I'm feeling, you know, ah, this is the life, and that's fine. And over a period of time, if I'm properly situated, and whatever it is, it's either the hand of time keeps moving and tick, 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 the deeper purification to sustain brahmachari ashram, for whatever the reason, you know, deeper seated stuff or negligence or so many combinations of things, if I'm open and submissive to hearing and guidance, same point as, you know, that yukta vairagya thing, then someone can tap me on the shoulder and say, and I'm being honest with myself and with others, that's a big item. At least those that are properly guiding me, then it doesn't have to be whiplash. It can be something else. Either some correction of how I'm conducting myself, more association, or restoring proper sadhana, or, you know, something that's more graceful than some of the whiplash thing that I've seen course of time. Then it's not disrespectful. It's a stage. Okay. Something else? Yes.
Maharaj, when we hear these very truthful, cold, hard facts of life about the degradation between men and women, in the material world, are we to understand that actually marriage between a Krishna-conscious people, is that simply truly a formality? Are there any really, truly healthy spiritual relationships?
Sure.
Okay.
Sure.
But the push is
to give
them up.
Were you here yesterday?
Pardon me?
Were you here yesterday?
No, I was doing service in the
kitchen.
Okay.
Can you get that reference in Bhagavad Gita? Chapter 13. So, sure. I mean, you want to hear it. So, many amongst our disciplic succession, the great, great, great acharyas, a number of them were grihasthas. Great, great, great acharyas. You want to hear some names?
But at the time of death, we have to give it up.
Huh?
At the time of death, we have to give it up because we have a material body.
Sure, we have to give it up. Everything that's of this world, we have to give up. It's taken away.
But is there a spiritual relationship that continues, or is grihastha life a formality to help the people to come to their Krishna consciousness?
Are you saying, is there such a thing? Is your question, do souls that are purely Krishna conscious, husband and wife, are they husband and wife in the spiritual world? Is that your question? That's not your question.
No, not necessarily. Okay. Just that there seems to be such a heavy push for the cold, hard facts of life. There's so much maya that we tend to feel that, are there healthy relationships while we're trying to get out of maya?
Bhagavad Gita, chapter 13, texts 8 through 12. As for detachment from children, wife, and home, because that's one of the items of knowledge, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. Whew. Okay. But, when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. The best process for making the home pleasant is Krishna consciousness. If one is in full Krishna consciousness, he can make his home very happy, because this process of Krishna consciousness is very easy. Then he gives four things. One need only chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One, accept the remnants of foodstuffs offered to Krishna. Three, have some discussion on books like Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, and 4, engage oneself in deity worship. These 4 things will make one happy. One should train his family members in this way. The family members can sit down morning and evening and chant together Maha Mantra. If one can mold his family life in this way to develop Krishna consciousness following these 4 principles, then there is no need to change from family life to renounced life. Yay! It's not so easy. It's easy, but you know, material inclinations make it not so easy. But if it is not congenial, not favorable for spiritual advancement, then family life should be abandoned. One must sacrifice everything to realize and serve Krishna. So, balance or razor's edge, those metaphors. Prabhupada and our Vedic culture doesn't engage people in suicide missions. Go ahead, get married. There's Krishna conscious marriage. There's a formula for it. But follow the Krishna conscious marriage formula. And then, yes, it's to be given up. But then there's this, you know, condition that says it may not need to be given up. Thinking of Jayadeva Goswami, because he's a wonderful personality. There's no indication that he gave up his wife and took sannyas and so forth. He lived his life, as far as the literature that I've seen, he lived his life that way, in Krishna consciousness. But then there's different ways, according to different individuals. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gave up his family life. But he did not, like, it's garbage. He spiritually evolved to the point where he was on another platform. The dependents were able to maintain themselves. And he did, he acted in a fully responsible way. So different. But yes, it must be given up. You can't carry it with you. So by proper detachment or, gradual detachment or, various methods, but detachment is required. And that even in the proper Krishna conscious family life, I'll read the sentence, 2 sentences again. Gotta find the page. As far as detachment from children, wife, and home, it is not meant that one should have no feeling for these. They are natural objects of affection. But when they are not favorable to spiritual progress, then one should not be attached to them. All right, we can move on. Jitendra, you got something? I catch a vibration.
In the, I think it's the Sri Ashopanishad, that Kali Yuga will reach a point where Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness will save the world from its darkest hour. And I've talked to devotees, and they're thinking, and then Kali Yuga goes on for 432,000 years. But a lot of people think, how can it go much farther than it is now? It's so degraded now that, do you get that feeling? When you're a little kid.
Sure. You just see it. Continual degradation.
Yeah.
Continual degradation. So I'm listening sequentially to morning walks. Srila Prabhupada's recorded morning walk conversations, and he was describing that the whole modern civilization will collapse, implode. That doesn't, you know, what does that mean? It's, you know, Kali Yuga isn't going to stop when that happens. Okay, it's over now. Kali Yuga continues. The degradation, the influences of the modes of nature don't stop because, you know, the economy implodes or governments implode or people rebel or there's big wars or something. The modes of nature continue. Degrading, degrading. We know that from the 12th canto, at the end of Kali Yuga, the 432,000 years scene, it continues. Anything else? Karunanidhi, I'm sorry, you've been patiently raising your hand.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, I was trying to say something from, I forgot to one verse either from Hari Bhakti Vilas or from some other scripture regarding to his questions about initiation, that it is just like I remember that translation only, that it is just like the bell metal, if after what is it called, alkalizing.
Alchemy.
Bleaching. Yeah, that how it becomes like a bell metal, becomes like, look like gold. Like that after initiation, that how the changes take place.
That's the metaphor. His question was, what's the difference? What's the difference between bell metal and gold? What's the difference between before initiation and after initiation? That's what he wanted to know. Okay, thank you very much, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.